Hour number two of Sports 180 begins. Thank you for being with us on this fun Friday afternoon. We'll have sports talk for you at 3 o'clock. There's a lot going on for Tennessee fans to pay attention to. Baseball, softball, which it was far from guaranteed to be alive at this point, but the Tennessee softball team with an exciting 1-0 win last night. You're hoping maybe that's some good Arkansas juju for the baseball team this upcoming weekend. Frankly, they probably have nothing to do with each other, but you can read into that if you want to, heading into the baseball series starting up. But that's a big focus, and yeah, that's another part of this, Heather. May 14th, a lot of years here in the last, 10 to 14 years almost, there hasn't been a lot of Tennessee baseball talk in the middle of May. So that's another part of it. It kind of feels like it's an added conversation for fans to get excited about in Knoxville.
Oh, it definitely is. And just knowing the history, I mean, you know, when I was in college, baseball was such a big deal. It was somewhere that you wanted to be. There was always people at the park. I mean, it was a big thing under Rod Delmonico. So, and I heard somebody, I think it was on Sports Talk, say earlier this week, if you just give people in Knoxville something to cheer for, they are just so ready. Like, people are sitting at a red light right now emotionally, ready to slam their foot on the gas to just get excited about anything sports-wise. So I just feel like baseball it's natural. I mean, it's the weather has been so great outside, and they are really a team to be proud of. We talked about Liam Spence earlier and then some of the other players that are just playing so great. I mean, it's a feisty bunch. They're fun on Twitter and social media. So I think that just adds to it. I mean, that just creates the secret sauce along with winning for the fans to really get behind them. And going back to your softball comment about their wins, shouts to Ashley Rogers, who is absolutely pitching her arm off right now. I mean, it's incredible what she's doing, 12 strikeouts yesterday. And then also Allie Shipman with the lone run. So shouts to both of those ladies doing big things in the SEC tournament.
No doubt about it. We will have Tennessee baseball and softball for you this evening right here on the Sports Animal, flagship station of the Vol Network. And we'll continue to look ahead to everything going on this weekend. It's a busy basketball weekend, final regular season weekend for the NBA. You have the Hall of Fame ceremony. There will be emotions attached to it as well, as Kobe Bryant will be inducted into this Hall of Fame class. Tim Duncan and Kevin Garnett also going in. So three of the best who played at the same time for a long time in the league, plus the start of the WNBA 25th season tip-off. So a big basketball weekend coming up in the professional level.
Big hoops weekend. And, you know, going back to the Kobe Bryant induction with Michael Jordan going to induct him after MJ spoke at Kobe's funeral ceremony that was in Staples Center. I mean, you talk about just a highly charged, incredibly emotional and thoughtful speech that he gave. It kind of gives me goosebumps thinking about it and then also projecting what it's going to be like this week for the induction ceremony. So I think that's actually something that people are definitely going to want to watch. Either in real time or it will live on the internet, and you'll definitely want to catch it because this is going to be a big moment. I mean, it's a really big moment. I can't imagine the pressure that's on MJ to really, you know, do this one right.
Yeah, and they had a legitimately close connection, and Michael Jordan was great at the eulogy with how he handled it and what he had to say about Kobe. Yep. And I think he'll be great this weekend too.
Oh yeah, I think he'll just be wonderful. And what I love about Michael Jordan, and I know he's made some jokes before, which is great, is he's not afraid to be an emotional guy. Whether it's heated when he was on the basketball court, whether it's the crying Jordan memes, you know, I mean, he's an emotional guy, and I really appreciate that because a lot of men are very stoic in their emotions and they don't want to get emotional. And MJ, he can't help it, you know? And so I think that just being a little different than the norm that we're used to, I think that's really cool. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, you know, during the eulogy, Michael was crying, talking about Kobe, and he joked that now I'm going to see myself as a meme for the next 10 years, another crying Jordan meme.
Yeah.
Which has been, yeah, it's in the sports world, the original crying Jordan meme from his Hall of Fame, that may be the most used meme we've ever had. I mean, he's the GOAT to so many people, right? He's Michael Jordan. So I think that might be the number one sports meme of all time.
I think it is.
Anytime somebody loses in sad, embarrassing fashion or whatever, just a disappointing loss, Michael Jordan's crying meme ends up on that person's face.
Yes, they will. They do face swaps so quickly. And it was, yeah. I mean, it looked like water faucets had been turned on behind his eyeballs. Yeah. Like, I mean, it was a lot of emotion. So, that you're right. I wonder what is the most used sports meme. That's a great one. I mean, there's so many individual college football fan bases that have their own memes, and then they all have the same pose, the surrender
Tennessee's
cobra.
Tennessee's popped up on a few.
Yeah, the surrender cobra, as it's been dubbed, where people just have their hands on top of their head. I mean, that goes with any color in the world. You have seen every single fan base be represented with the surrender cobra.
I thought we would see a little more Jeremy Pruitt with the full Gator coverage that he pulled off at one point during the season. I think talking to Kirby, maybe. I thought we'd see more of that.
What did David Ubben call it? A babushka? I mean, the craziest part of that was he had his entire head covered except for the parts of his face that were supposed to be covered. It was like, what is going on here? What am I missing? We should have known.
It wasn't
then,
the best
Josh.
Application. Also led to a fine from the SEC.
We should have known then, point. Josh. Yeah. You know how you look back and you're like, the people that called it after Dooley's loss to Kentucky, you guys nailed it. You were right. And we all should have known that Jeremy Pruitt having his entire head covered except for his nose and mouth with that gator. I mean, we should have just called it there.
I thought it was a good look. I didn't really see what the problem was. You go out, you want a social distance, cover the rest of your face. Nobody's going to know who you are.
You know, the Saints fans used to do that. They used to just cut two holes in a paper bag. There you go.
I recall. Yeah, I'm surprised we didn't see some of that come back this fall for some upset teams. Kings fans, that'll be a tease for our pop-up fact. We'll come back here on Sports 180. Kentucky's landed a big-time basketball player. You've probably heard about that before. Does that alter the landscape in the SEC, especially as it compares to Tennessee? Gary Parrish of CBS Sports on that coming up next right here on Sports 180 on 99.1, the Sports Animal. Welcome back into Sports 180. Thank you for being with us. In 15 minutes, what Kyler Kerberson had to say about Tennessee's offensive line, the former Tennessee offensive lineman weighing in on the offense you will see this upcoming fall for the Vols. Before that, Heather, there was big college basketball news this week with Kentucky landing talented point guard Ty Washington, one of the best names in the class, I would say, as well. He's a highly regarded point guard that will join Kentucky this upcoming season. How does that affect Kentucky compared to Tennessee? Well, I looked at the updated rankings from Gary Parrish at CBSSports.com. He moved Kentucky up four spots from the previous ranking he had for the Wildcats. Kentucky is now the number 17 team in the country projected for this upcoming college basketball season. Gary wrote this: the addition of five-star prospect Ty Washington gives Kentucky the type of talented point guard that did not exist on last season's roster. Does that sound familiar, by the way? He'll pair with three proven transfers and should help the Wildcats return to the NCAA tournament after missing the field of 68 in 2021. Okay, how about the comparison to Tennessee? Gary still has Kentucky ranked behind the Vols. He has Tennessee at number 15, pointing to John Fulkerson's decision to return for another season, giving Tennessee some experience, helps Tennessee bring back five of the top eight scores from a team that earned a number five seed in the NCAA tournament. He goes on to write, that experienced core will pair nicely with a recruiting class highlighted by one of the best point guards in the class, that being Kennedy Chandler, and another newcomer who just averaged 11.7 points while shooting 44% from three-point range at Auburn in Justin Powell. That's before you get to other newcomers that will be a part of the 2021 signing class for Tennessee. So Gary Parrish has Tennessee at number 15 in the country. That is behind Arkansas at number 10 out of the SEC and Alabama at number 4 in the nation.
Yes, and you know what is really interesting, because we've been tracking Gary Parrish's rankings from the day after the national championship game to now. And Tennessee, with the pieces that they have been able to add to this recruiting class, how the roster has shaped up, the transfer portal, how that has impacted the University of Tennessee, and of course, John Fulkerson making the decision to come back. Remember, Tennessee was barely in Gary Parrish's initial top 25. They were like hanging on by a thread at either 24 or 25. So this overhaul of the roster and really filling in a lot of those gaps, that's huge for Tennessee. I mean, that has raised expectations as they've risen through the preseason rankings.
Yeah, I mean, number 15 right now is where Gary has Tennessee. It's one person's opinion, of course, but that would be better than Tennessee was this past season. Tennessee did not finish as a top 15 team.
You're absolutely right. And we thought that they
or
could
play
get
like
there.
One for a lot of the season. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And we thought that they could get there, especially in the tournament with how things were kind of shaping up. But you thought that the Sweet 16 was pretty much Tennessee's ceiling with the way they had played in the month of February. Just very inconsistent. And still, I mean, who knows what happened? Only the players and the coaches really, truly know what affected this team versus what didn't. And so I go back to our march toward normalcy and having a more normal summer, a more normal start to the season. You know, hopefully everybody being healthier and not having to factor in the COVID effect of this year. I just feel like that's going to give Tennessee and other teams. I mean, Kentucky very much underachieved as well. With their very
big
disappointing
time.
Season. So, I mean, there were a lot of teams that did not reach their full potential this year for a plethora of reasons, Tennessee being one of them. So I think you just you stay the course and you're expecting Tennessee to be in the Sweet 16 this year. I think that's a very fair expectation to have.
I want to see Kentucky be good again this year. Kentucky
Absolutely.
Not being any good is really not all that fun for SEC basketball. You still want to beat them. I'm not saying you want Kentucky to be better than you, but Kentucky being bad at basketball makes SEC basketball less interesting.
Yeah, it totally does. And it also negatively impacts how the SEC is viewed from the national media. You know, they skew it a little bit like, oh, the SEC is down because Kentucky's down, which that wasn't the case this year. In my opinion, with what Eric Musselman was doing at Arkansas, what was going on at Alabama. So, you know, there were other people to rise up, but you still didn't have the juice when it came to the tournament with Kentucky not being there. And then, you know, also Kentucky fans and the family suffering that tragedy with Terrence Clark's untimely passing this offseason, you know, as he was expected to go in the draft. I mean, that's just a lot emotionally for the Wildcat basketball team. I mean, it was a tough year with COVID, with not meeting expectations, and then somebody that was in your program, it passes away. I mean, that's just a lot emotionally. So you want to see them be able to bounce back from all of that.
Joel Silverberg, host of the Behind the Arc podcast from the Sports and Animal. Gary Parrish has Tennessee third in the SEC. If you look at his rankings, Alabama number 4 in the country, Arkansas number 10, Tennessee number 15, Kentucky number 17. Is that about right? Would you adjust it at all? Auburn number 24, by the way. So that's what is that? That's the fifth SEC team and the last one in the top 25.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I know that Parrish has been really, really high on Alabama for a while. He was high on them going into the tournament last year. And I think he, obviously, a lot of people expect Kentucky to be able to bounce back. So for Tennessee, you're kind of hitting the reset button, and you had a really good recruiting class, but you also had 2 5-stars in your last recruiting class, and you weren't able to win the SEC. So I think Tennessee should have expectations to be really good, but I can understand if Tennessee's not going into 2021 as the favorite to win the league.
Right. It is more of a, every year, I guess it's a prove it year, but I think it's more of a prove it year for Tennessee to bounce back with more incoming talent. Having John Fulkerson come back, I do think is important because of the experience that he has, and he should have more help, I think, in the front court this year without knowing exactly what they'll be able to get with Brandon Huntley Hatfield. My guess is they'll get something pretty good. And Jonas Sadu, who I believe received a 5th star
yes.
from Rivals. So, you know, he's a nice prospect for Tennessee. We'll see what the immediate impact is, but I think there'll be more help. And I like the balance of the roster more this year, especially with Kennedy Chandler being there. That's probably where that conversation begins. But I like the balance of this roster better than last year's roster.
I think you're right, especially to point out the stability and the high level of play, even though it's unproven. I mean, somebody like a Kennedy Chandler being inserted into the point guard spot, and everything you read about his game and hear about his game and how it's going to translate, I think it does make you more hopeful. I mean, remember the Santiago Vescovi conversation is so nuanced. It has so many layers, Josh. When you think about, he was a godsend one year, being able to get in and basically start the SEC part of the schedule when we hadn't even really talked about it. He like gets on campus and then boom, first game versus LSU, he comes out, hits several threes, and you're like, wow, who is this guy? To then last year maybe having more attention on his flaws than on the positives that he brings to the table. So I think the evolution of Santiago Viscovi, and now maybe he can settle into a better position that fits his game more with Kennedy Chandler. I think that kind of at least helps explain the point that you were making about just how everything shakes out this year from a roster standpoint. I think you're putting some people into their more natural positions, and I think you're having that true solid point guard that's going to play point guard at the next level that you feel very confident in.
Trey with a message, listening with what I said about Kentucky, saying Kentucky being bad at basketball is great. I don't want to see them be good. I don't care about how good the SEC is. I wasn't talking about strength of the league. Actually, there is something to be said about strength of the league that can help you and your team with tournament seeding. So you do want the conference to be good. I don't think that's debatable. What I was referring to is interesting. That's why I said you still want to beat them, but it's more entertaining. Basketball is more interesting and more fun if Kentucky's good at basketball. It also means more if you beat them.
I was about to say, yeah, it's not.
I know they're
going to
be, obviously, Trey disagrees and other people are as well, but obviously you want the conference to be good because it helps you and how you're viewed when it comes to the tournament. I think that's obvious, but I'm more entertained if Kentucky's good, and that game's a big one. You know, if Kentucky's no good, what does it really mean at Thompson Bowling Arena? If Kentucky's a really good team and John Calipari's coming in with a top 10 whatever basketball team, top 20 team at least, then more eyes are on you, and you beating them becomes a bigger deal.
It absolutely does. I mean, remember a couple of seasons ago when Tennessee defeated Kentucky at Rupp Arena, and John Fulkerson basically like had his coming out party, and you were like, holy smokes, what just happened? I mean, that was a 25-win Kentucky team. You know, you've beaten them in years where they've gone on to win 30 games. That means more than beating a Kentucky team that went 9-16 last year. So I respectfully disagree with our Twitter guy, but I see his point. You know, Tennessee was treated like a doormat by Big Blue Nation for so long that there's no love lost there for most people. But I still fall in line with you, Josh. It means more to beat somebody good. That's why like my one thing, if I could make anything happen with Tennessee football, it would be to beat Alabama with Nick Saban. Like, I don't care if you can beat them after Nick Saban. I mean, maybe they hire the Mike Shula 2.0, you know, to replace Nick. You want to beat them while they're at their best because that means something. So I just, that's how I feel too. I think me and you are on the same page.
That would be an example though, where I know people are going to disagree, because if you could choose Alabama being really good, let's say Tennessee becomes good and Tennessee is a championship contender in the SEC in football, because Tennessee basketball is a championship contender, right? If Tennessee football is back to that level, do you want Alabama to be close to what it's been, or would you rather see Alabama fall apart similar to what Tennessee's been the last decade?
Oh, I mean, I would love at some point in time for Alabama to crumble. Yes, I would, because they've just been riding on a high for so long. But I'm telling you, the first win Tennessee ever, like, whenever you can break this streak, I still want this streak to be broken when Nick Saban is the head coach, before the empire crumbles, because I think that will mean more for Tennessee's comeuppance than, you know, Alabama falling apart because Nick Saban has gotten older or, you know, whatever. So, yeah, I want the streak to be broken where Alabama is strong and it means that Tennessee was stronger in the win.
And also, I should say, football and basketball are not apples and apples, apples to apples comparison, because basketball, you're going to play twice a year.
Yeah.
And if you lose, it's not that big of a deal. Football, you lose, it, you know, has a big impact, and you obviously play once a season, at least in the regular season. We'll continue. Trey, I hear you, though. We'll come back. We'll shift back to football. Tennessee's offensive line. What should you think? What should you expect this fall? What former Tennessee offensive lineman Kyler Kerbison had to say about that? That's coming up next right here on 99.1, the Sports Animal. This is Sports 180. Thank you for being with us. With Heather Harrington, I'm Josh Ward. We have 90 minutes remaining, and then Sports Talk will take over at 3 o'clock. We'll get back to Tennessee's upcoming baseball series against Arkansas and some Tennessee basketball still to cover. Here, this segment, Tennessee football. And a big question during the offseason will be Tennessee's quarterback position, but what about the offensive line? Those guys have to protect whoever's playing quarterback. Well, we asked Kyler Kerbison, who started at left tackle, played a number of offensive line positions for Tennessee during his time with the Vols, and he's seen this Tennessee offense in person. He's seen the offensive line. So joining us earlier this week, Kyler talked about what he kind of expects out of the offensive line and Tennessee's offense in year one with Josh Heupel.
I mean, I honestly love the way it looks. I thought last year wasn't quite up to par of what it was expected of those guys. And even though we lost a few guys this offseason, I still feel like we're in a very good spot. I mean, being able to watch them during the spring game, went to a practice also, and seeing the work they're putting in, seeing, you know, what I predicted as the ones in Dane Davis, Spraggins, Cooper Mays, Cade Mays, Darnell Wright. That's how I see the one offensive line being. And that is a lot of good talent, big, big, hefty guys up there, because that was an issue in recent years, having, you know, 270, 280 guys trying to play in the SEC. It's just not quite enough. And I love the way it looks. I love the way that they're competing. I love the fast and up-tempo offense. It really does help an offensive lineman versus a D end who is, you know, a freak athlete and can run all over the field. Let's get them a little bit tired so it's a little bit easier on those tackles. But, yes, I love the direction that it's going.
Let me ask you this too, Kyler. Going from whatever offense Jim Chaney and Jeremy Pruitt were running last year, where they were really grinding it out, pounding the ball, everything was really slow, not a ton of plays run, to fast forward in a calendar year, now it's all hurry up, go, go, go. What kind of transition is that like for the offensive line especially?
It's going to be a big one. It's definitely going to come on the shoulders of Cooper, him being the starting center. He really has to lead the entire group and let them know exactly what's going on in every play. Let them know what the defense is in, let them know exactly what blocking scheme they're going to be doing. And they've kind of simplified it down to where Cooper can say one word and the entire offensive line knows what's going on. And, if he can do that and make it simple for them, it can make them go faster and not worry about so much stuff. Now, their conditioning is going to have to be a lot better than it was last year. I mean, the mundane offense that we had, run on first, run on second, spread it out, throw it on third, it just doesn't work. It didn't work last year. I don't think it's ever going to work in football. And it's nice to see this Josh Heupel offense where it doesn't matter what down it is, we're going to take a shot if we got it. And I think that's what happened in the spring game when, you know, he probably told the quarterbacks, hey, if you have a one-on-one matchup, if you think your guy can catch that ball, throw it to him, which is why Jack Jacek had an amazing game. And, you know, over 200 yards or whatever it was, it's, hey, take your shots when you got them. And that kind of offense, that up-tempo, that aggressive style, I think can really, succeed in this SEC.
Kyler Kerbison, former Tennessee offensive lineman, he has the Believe in Tennessee podcast you can go check out as well. And he was talking about Tennessee's offensive line and Tennessee's offense overall, Heather, with us earlier this week. Did that give you more confidence in what Tennessee will have up front and ultimately what it will have on offense overall?
Well, absolutely, because if anybody understands the nuance of such a big transition on the offensive line going from the previous offense to the Josh Heupel offense, I think it's Kyler Kerbison. When he was speaking about how difficult the transition is going to be, but also how much better equipped these guys will be because of their size, because of their athleticism, I was really paying attention to that. And so it still gives me, I think I've been a little more bullish on what the offensive line under Glenn Ellerbe is going to be able to do this year than you have. And I totally understand your perspective and point of view, because there's a lot of unknowns, you know, and you are missing Wanye Morris, who was a guy that had a ton of upside. But with the emergence of Dane Davis, I think it's a great story. But nonetheless, if he plays, a solid left tackle position, that could just be huge for this Tennessee team. And then you also, as Kyler laid it out, you've got Cade on the inside playing guard, which seems to be a better natural fit. And I've talked at length about this with Eric Kane. He just feels like that is the spot where Cade needs to play. So when he's going over Davis, Spraggins, Cooper, Cade, Darnell, yeah, there's not a lot of collective starts there, but it does seem like a starting five that could build some really good chemistry and be pretty productive early on.
Yeah, I just I guess I need to see it from Tennessee's offensive line because of how many times we've had this conversation about what it could become. They have players with ability, so I'm not ruling out at all that Tennessee will have good, consistent offensive line play this season. But to be a top half of the league offensive line, I'm going to need to see a lot more to really believe that that's going to be the case.
Well, now, like, you know, sixth or seventh would still be top half. I don't know. I don't think they're going to be one of the best. And we definitely thought that, you know, 12 months ago when we were going into the 2020 season, and that obviously didn't pan out. So that was a huge blow. And then, of course, that offensive line has been completely deconstructed and reconstructed with new personnel. So I agree with you. I mean, I totally see it, that these guys have a lot to prove. I think I am just, I guess, putting my faith in this offensive staff that does have a clear vision of what they want to do. I still feel like things were so murky with what Jim Chaney wanted to do along with Jeremy Pruitt. And I also have some questions about the coaching by Will Friend. So having known all that and then knowing what these guys want to do, I guess I'm just putting the blind faith in there that they are going to have more of a direction that they're going and be able to get more out of the players because of that direction. Does that make sense? I mean, it's still
sure.
kind of blind faith. Well, it's still being optimistic,
right.
Which is not my norm.
Right.
I get it. It's not my norm. It's sunny outside, right. And the sunshine is infiltrating my brain.
Right, which is fine. But that would kind of be just what I said, except the opposite. I'm not going to give blind faith. So
that's exactly
I'm not
what
rolling
I said,
it out.
But
I'm just,
opposite. I love that.
Yeah, I'm not going to assume that they'll be good. I'll give them a chance to be a pretty good offensive line, but and I think it's true. I think Glenn Ellerbe is well thought of as an offensive line coach, but I'm not going to offer up any blind faith.
Yeah, no, and I totally get it. And you know, maybe I need to caution myself. I've cautioned Tennessee fans about just, you know, getting overreacting to the situation that they're in. Like, hey, just give these guys a chance. Let's see how all of this comes together. So maybe I need to kind of pump the brakes on it. But I feel like you've had so many good pieces of an offensive line for so long that, and I know pieces change year to year, and Trey Smith isn't back in a Tennessee uniform. I get that, but I feel like there's some really solid pieces on this offensive line that maybe these guys can finally get them to all click and be able to operate like they should have been operating over the past couple of seasons with as much talent there was the past couple of years.
Tennessee fans will hope that these pieces will come together for Tennessee's offensive line and offense overall this upcoming season. We will come back here on Sports 180, playoff droughts in the pro sports. We'll catch up. It's been a while for a few of these franchises. We'll have our pop-up fact for you coming up next. A lot to discuss to get you ready for the weekend. You'll hear from Tennessee basketball signee Jemai Mashak in the final hour of the show. We are with you until 3 o'clock. You're listening to Sports 180 on 99.1, the Sports Animal. Welcome back into Sports 180. Download the WNML app, and you can listen on the go anytime. Find us on demand in the podcast section of the WNML app. You can also subscribe and listen anytime on Apple Podcasts. We appreciate you being with us as we will be here until 3 o'clock. That's when Sports Talk will take over. With Heather Harrington and Joel Silverberg, I'm Josh Ward, as here in the final segment of hour number two, we hit today's pop-up fact. Heather, congratulations to the Sacramento Kings. They have extended their NBA leading streak of missed postseasons to 15 straight. It has now been a decade and a half since the Sacramento Kings reached the postseason in the NBA. We'll tell you about the other league-leading streaks in a moment, but 15 years. I think often it's easy to overlook Sacramento because we don't think about Sacramento that much when we talk about worst-run franchises, but man, the Kings have just, they've made all kinds of wrong moves over the years.
Also, with other states either underrepresented or not represented at all in the NBA, should Sacramento look around? Do we really need four basketball teams in the Golden State? I don't know. Maybe that's another conversation, but you're absolutely right. I mean, 15 straight years of not even being the last seed in and getting one playoff series, that is definitely tough. And outside of winning the lottery and getting the number one pick, I mean, how do you break out of something like that, Josh?
Well, I believe this is right. I think that Dame Lillard and CJ McCollum have both talked about being told or led to believe that the Kings were going to take them, and then they made different selections, and now they're both together in Portland, and they went to the Western Conference Finals together just a couple of years ago.
Wow.
And Kings fans would probably like to see that. They had a chance to take Luka a few years ago, took Marvin Bagley instead. So there were ways to be better than they are now, but they are not. So the Kings with the longest streak in the NBA, 15 straight seasons missing the postseason, that is not as bad as what the Seattle Mariners have experienced. 19 years, and I would bet on that being extended as well this year. They're at 19 years, the NFL leader, the New York Jets, they're at 10 years, and the Buffalo Sabres in the NHL leading the way with the longest streaks not reaching the postseason. So they're in double figures in all of those leagues. The Kings at 15 years, Mariners 19 years, the Jets at 10, the Buffalo Sabres at 10 in the NHL.
Would you think out of those four, and man, that is a collection right there, the Jets actually have the best opportunity to end their postseason drought before any of those others? And maybe we need Joel's take too with the Sabres being in there, but because I mean nothing about the Kings says they're going to do something. I mean, the Jets did fire Adam Gase, so that's a step in the right direction.
Yeah, Joel, if you want to weigh in on Buffalo, I would say, I mean, just I recognize it's been 15 years, so it's a problem, but I would still think Sacramento would be closer because they're also in a league where they've extended it now to where even if you're the 10th seed, you have a shot to get into the playoffs with the play-in. So I would think they're closer. The Kings finished, or currently, I guess, they're two games behind San Antonio for that 10th seed at 31-39. They also play in a conference that's really tough, so that'll make it challenging. But moving on from Adam Gase, I think is the right move, and we'll see what happens with Zach Wilson at quarterback, but no, I can't sit here and express much confidence in the Jets yet.
Yeah, Buffalo, I think, is actually getting farther away. It looked like they were doing a nice job at developing a young core with Jack Eichel and a couple of those guys that they had, but now it's looking like Eichel's going to be on the move because he's frustrated with the way that the team handled his neck injury that he dealt with this season, so now it's looking like there's going to be a Jack Eichel sweepstakes for the former number two overall pick. So if he's out the door in a season where you already have the worst record in hockey, I don't think Buffalo's getting any closer. I do think the Kings were close a few years ago. What was it, three seasons ago when they were in that battle for the eighth seed with a couple of other teams? So and especially now, just with how much of a playoff field there is, I would think the Kings are the closest. But it has surprised me that the Mariners haven't been able to find a team where just one season they can manage to get in. But you are talking about the smallest playoff field in Major League Baseball.
Right, that's a big part of the challenge. I don't see it with them this year. They're currently 18-20, and I don't expect them to be there. They were in the ALCS 20 years ago, but that's about it. And you think about, I mean, those Mariners teams were so much fun with Griffey, Buehner, A-Rod then came up, Randy Johnson, big unit, of course, a part of that rotation, Edgar Martinez, but poor Mariners fans have had a tough go of it the last 20 years. And then back to the Kings, Heather, if you asked about all the teams in California, I would say the Kings would be the popular choice if you're talking about a team to go to Seattle. If the city were to get a team, but it was by another franchise moving as opposed to expansion, a lot of people would probably point to the Kings and say that's the team that should move.
I think it's just like a no-brainer. One, the fans in Seattle actually want you, and maybe with a change of location. I mean, look at what the Rams were able to do in football, you know, a change of venue, and man, all of a sudden you're playing in a Super Bowl. So, I mean, I don't know. I feel like that would kind of be a no-brainer as Things have gotten a little stale right now for Sacramento, and everybody's paid, like, with the superstars in LA right now, and then also Steph in San Francisco. I just don't see where, like, go be number one, go be the biggest thing in like a whole state rather than being number four in your current state.
15 years and counting for the Sacramento Kings. That will probably conclude our annual Kings discussion for another year until they extend it to 16 straight missed postseasons. Well, next year,
we
our
could
pop-up
mention
fact.
It, Josh. We could mention it. Sorry to interrupt. Whenever the draft rolls around, so we'll put a pin in it. How about that?
When they make the wrong selection, we'll bring that up here in just a few weeks. Sounds good. The pop-up fact. It's brought to you by Burton McKinnish Law.
Burton McKinnish Law, with offices in Maryville, Sevierville, Western North Carolina, and even southeastern Kentucky. If you have a case, they can help. Family law and divorce, criminal defense, DUI, social security, or personal injury. It's time for you to trust Burton McKinnish Law. Visit burtonmckinnish.com.
The NBA has to be excited to have the Knicks back. I'm excited to see the Knicks back.
Oh, I think so. Yeah, absolutely. I just think it's huge. We talk about like geographic regions that are just starving for success. I mean, if you make anything relevant in New York City right now, it's just going to blow up. There's just going to be a huge fever if you can actually put together a run. I mean, Julius Randle, the way he has been playing this season, just insane. And so, I mean, that's only going to up his star value. And as the city kind of returns to normalcy, they want to see those guys. You know, the people are wanting to see this team. So I think it's just really cool because the Knicks, now remind me if I'm wrong, I remember all the battles with Patrick Ewing, you know, when the Rockets were really good in the 90s. And then ever since the late 90s, I mean, the Knicks have just fallen off. I guess they can maybe have popped up here and there, but not like they were when Ewing was there.
Right. They had a very brief run with little to no success with Carmelo Anthony. But yeah, it's been a tough couple of decades for the New York Knicks, and we'll see if they're able to get out of the first round, but they have been much better, and the hire of Tom Thibodeau was a good move for that franchise. We'll come back for a final hour of Sports 180, 656-9900 to join us on 99.1, the Sports Animal.